Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Before we jump into today's show, let's take a moment to thank our sponsors, the folks over at Markham Search. Markham Search LLC offers premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States, so please do keep them in mind for all of your permanent, temporary, and other staffing needs. Today we have with us on the show Lee J. Berman. Lee J. Berman began as a full-time mediator 24 years ago and has successfully mediated over 2,300 matters. He specializes in business partnership disputes, both in and out of a litigation setting, with an emphasis on family-owned and closely held businesses, and also is known in the entertainment business as the band whisperer for keeping successful performing acts together and working smoothly as a highly performing cohesive unit. As a mediator, he is a national panelist with the American Arbitration Association, a distinguished fellow with the International Academy of Mediators, as well as a chartered diplomat with the National Academy of Distinguished Neutrals, certified by the International Mediation Institute. He has won numerous awards and has been written up twice in California's Daily Journal as the top neutral. Additionally, he has also received the Corporate Insider 2017 Legal Awards for Mediation Firm of the Year, and recently Acquisition International Magazine awarded him Leading Mediator of the Year in the USA in 2018. As an executive coach, he carries a roster of 20 to 25 executives that he is coaching at any given time. His coaching work has spanned from the highest levels of the world's largest professional services firms, ranging from strategic and consulting firms to accounting firms and law firms, as well as C-suite executives in Fortune 500 businesses and chief justices at the highest levels of state courts. As a respected trainer, he founded the American Institute of Mediation, leaving his position as director of Pepperdine Law School's Mediating the Litigated Case program after 7 years. In addition to lecturing and training at Pepperdine, he has also done so in many other academic institutions and has published articles on topics including mediation, negotiation, ethics, and leadership, along with his blog, Eye on Conflict. The ABA will be publishing two of his books as well in 2018 and 2019. Thank you so much for joining us today, Lee J.
Jen, it's my pleasure. Thanks so much for going through all of that. I think that's our show. We can wrap now, right?
I know. It's done. We're done. Thank you so much for tuning in. Wishing everybody a wonderful rest of your week. Find the show on iTunes. Call it a day. Well, I have to say, though, Lee J., for a topic this big, I think it deserves a pretty big bio, and I didn't want to cut any of that out because, you know, dealing with conflict is something that we all deal with. You know, sometimes I have guests on the show that might not be appropriate for every listener out there, but I remember very vividly when I got the release about a class that you were doing in LA on conflict, and I immediately thought, I need to reach out to this guy because I think this would be a very, very valuable topic for listeners, no matter what you're going through in your life. We all have conflict, right?
It's so true. And we don't like to call it that. We don't like to face it. You know, I go into a room of people and there are 100 people in there to hear a talk or something, and I ask them, like, how many of you have conflict in your lives? And like 4 hands go up. We don't like to confess, you know, it's something we don't like to step into. We don't like to talk about it. You know, we'll complain about the other person to our friends, but we don't confront it. We don't step into it. So yeah, it's an interesting word.
So how did this become your area of expertise? How did you become the conflict expert?
Like the book says, 25 years and 10,000 times, right? and truly, I mean, the real honest answer to that question is by making tens of thousands of mistakes and just trying to learn from them as I go. But I got into it because I always had this comfort level with stepping in the middle of conflict, whether, you know, my 11-year-old buddy's mom wouldn't let him, you know, stay for dinner or spend the night. I'd say, give me the phone, and I'd talk his mom into it. I realized recently I was at a mediator's conference in Washington, D.C. There were 1,000 of us there, and there was some playoff hockey game going on. The hockey arena opens up, all the fans pour out, and in no time at all, the blue shirts, and it was a game 7 elimination, everybody obviously been drinking a lot. The blue jerseys line up on one side of the curb, the red jerseys on the other side of the curb, and they're, you know, screaming and yelling and pointing and making no sense to anybody but themselves, I'm sure. And the rest of my colleagues I'd have dinner with all made a left turn and walked away. And me, I made a right turn and went right for the middle of them and, you know, disbanded the whole thing and sent everybody off to have more drinks. And,
no kidding.
But yeah, so I always was comfortable in the middle of two people arguing. And I think that's a pretty good, it's a pretty good first indication that somebody belongs in HR or management or mediation.
Okay, so I have a question for you because I am the opposite of you. I'm the antithesis. Ever since I was a little girl, I remember that if my friend's mom was upset with her about doing a sleepover or if my parents were upset, I immediately shut down in the face of tension. It's like, oh my God, the sky is falling. I am not going to survive this. Just let this be over. I'm going to go stick my, you know, head in the sand until it's over.
You're normal. You're normal then.
I don't feel normal. I feel like a jerk sometimes in, you know, negotiations and business settings because I feel like the people who have that skill that you have, that conflict resolution, the not shying away from confrontation, those are the people who can often negotiate the best raises, you know, deal with high level positions, wind up in an executive role. But even for me, I've had to push myself out of my comfort zone to do those things. But how do you train yourself if you're a quote unquote normal person like me who shies away from conflict? How do you even begin to assimilate conflict into your life in a healthy way?
So first of all, I think at the highest level, and for someone who's a professional like you and comes into contact with it a lot, I think at the highest level, it's learning about it. It's going to see the Wizard of Oz and looking behind the curtain and breaking it down and understanding what it is and why it's happening. So hopefully that's one of the things we can do some today on the show. Is help people see it for what it is, and so it's not as scary. And then studying it, like when you talk about negotiation tactics, for example, like walking away and being a jerk and all of that, and sometimes it works. It does sometimes in certain settings with certain people, but it's only one way of doing things. And so learning about negotiation, when you're negotiating your own salary and bonus and, you know, all that sort of thing, if you can learn how negotiation works and why the people are doing what they're doing so that it's more strategic rather than gut instinct, you won't be relying on your gut that says, oh my gosh, get me out of here. This is awful and horrible and I'd rather do anything else in the world but this.
Mm,
but the car companies love you. I have to tell you, car companies love you.
I am the queen of like buying cars that I never wanted. So I have done that so many times. And it's just, I think only once in my life when I was car shopping did I finally like hit my limit with the dealership in Santa Monica. But I am the queen. And that's why you do have to learn to adapt is if you don't have the skill of diving into conflict rather than shying away from it, it can cost you money, time, emotional upset. And that's why I'm so interested in this topic is tell me, let's talk a little bit about the strategic side, because I think that's an interesting component that you just touched on. When you were saying, rather than have it be kind of this emotional reactive thing, let's talk about how do you flip the switch and begin to grow your strategic muscle so that way when conflict does occur, you can approach it in a strategic, healthy way rather than a shy and runaway sort of method.
Fantastic question. So it, like everything, it starts with learning. So if we could draw a diagram with a box at the top and then two boxes, like an org chart almost coming off both sides of it, think of that as the top box is the issue. It's the thing that people are fighting over. It's the thing over which they disagree. And the two sort of boxes coming off of it, one is the other person's opinion about how it should be done or what it should come out like. And the other box is your opinion of it. If you go back and forth just on your opinions, we call those your positions on the conflict, then what's going to happen is they're going to say, no, it needs to be this way. And you're going to say, no, but I want it this way. And they're going to say, it's not ever going to be that way. And it starts, I can feel you getting nervous as I'm saying this.
I know, I'm shutting down. I'm withdrawing. Are you still talking?
Exactly. But so what happens is it just escalates because no one's going to cave on their position because they feel strongly about it. And we haven't given them any information to the contrary So one of the tenets of conflict resolution is understanding that people never change their minds, but given new information, they'll make a new decision. So when people are going this way, no, this way, but this way is better, but no, this way is better, if they're not sitting down and going, help me understand what about your way makes so much sense to you, and then let me explain to you why I think my way makes sense, that's when we start to have a discussion, a dialogue. But if we're just banging the table on positions or hanging up the phone or however we're doing it, the only other good thing that can come out of that sometimes is compromise. You can take two different people who would say, well, okay, what if I give you a little bit, but we do the rest my way? And you say, okay, what if we do? And so now we're chopping up something into pieces and we're compromising who's going to get how much or what percentage of it or something. So when we're doing that kind of positional bargaining, maybe we can get a compromise and both walk away happy. But I think most people, if you think about the last time you compromised and you set out to get something and you walked away with half of it, you're giggling. So you know where I'm going with this. Most people don't feel like it's 50-50 at the end of the day. Do you?
No.
Yeah. You're anchored to this whole thing that I wanted and you walk away with half of it. And I think most people are saying that person just took half of what I set out to get. And it feels like a loss. We're anchored to the loss from the whole rather than to the gain of the thing that we got. And so that's where people get smart and say, well, I'll ask for twice what I want. So when I get half, it'll be what I really want. And, you know, and sort of game the system that way. But what's most important about it is if you picture those boxes that we drew, that org chart looking thing, and have another one drop off of each of the two sides that are there so that on your side on the right, let's say, where you were saying, I want it this way, the box below that, directly below it, is the one that's going to contain the reasons why you want it that way. And they may be tangible reasons, like it just makes more sense, it's more effective, it's more cost effective, or whatever. But it may also be, my ego is threatened, or I need more recognition, or this person always bullies me, I need to stand up to them. But those underlying reasons, we call those your interests. That's what you're really bargaining for, is what you're interested in, what matters to you. So, you know, if I'm an HR manager and that you've helped to place, and somebody walks in and says, they want this and they want that, and that's not fair, and you need to do something about it, the HR manager has two choices in that moment, either to say, no, actually, it can't be that way, and here's why, or to say, tell me what about that is so important to you. And if you say, help me understand, it disarms people. And then you ask about what about it is so important to you, then they're going to give you the reasons they're fighting for it. Because Jan always gets the upper hand, or because, you know, so-and-so only listens to this person, or because no one's listening to me and this is truly the best idea because I've analyzed all of them. So whatever those reasons are, we can help them get that thing fixed, the person to listen or the for them to articulate it better or be heard better or something. And that's when suddenly now we're talking about what people want and need rather than what they're demanding. And now the conflict is completely de-escalated and now we can problem solve.
Wow, that's amazing. And so if you're in a conversation, what I heard, and I actually am taking notes as we're speaking, because I think that there are a lot of great gems here that you're sharing with our listeners, is that help me understand what about it is so important to you is one thing that I really heard you say. And so if somebody were engaged in some sort of conflict, this would be a good opening, or at what point do you introduce that part of the conversation?
So I go there right away. The way this works is somebody comes at you with a head of steam, if it's a conflict, right? They're coming to get in your face, either directly or about something else or whatever. But they come at you with both the content of what they're saying and the emotion that tells you how they feel about what they're saying. So let's just take an example. The senior executive vice president of a company retires. There's an empty corner office. The people on either side are both fighting for it. One of them says, you're right, never happens, right?
Of course, never.
I've been here since the beginning with him. We founded this company together. I deserve that office because I've been loyal and it's a longevity thing and so on and so on. The other one says, I know I only came on 4 years ago, but you guys were on the verge of bankruptcy when I got here. I brought all the new clients on. I developed the new product. I'm the one who's been the rainmaker. I deserve it because I matter more to this company's success and blah, 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 blah. And so the HR, the office manager or operations person or somebody who's got to make that decision between them now has a choice. On the positions, I want it, no, I want it, the person can flip a coin and either one of them wins and gets it and it's done and it's over. And I'm going to put an asterisk there because it's not really over. We'll come back to that. But if that person looks at the first one who's been there the longest and claims longevity and all of that, if that person says, help me understand what about this is so important to you, and asks more into the emotion and the heat that they're talking with rather than the facts and the content that they're laying out to make their case for why they deserve it, and probably better done separately rather than all together in that little situation we have here. But take that one person aside and ask them that question and have them say, I've been here. I always feel like I get overlooked. I don't get enough recognition. I deserve it. I've worked my whole career to earn that office and, you know, so on and so on. Now what we're hearing is they need validation and they need recognition. Mm-hmm. And they need someone to show that they understand the value that this person brings to the business. And they've just assigned in their minds that corner office as the thing that matters to them. But 5 minutes before, they were saying, if I don't get that corner office, I'm quitting this lousy company and, you know, blah, 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 because they couldn't articulate what was important to them. So the question you just cited helps them get to the personal side of it and talk about themselves. So the next question I would always ask is, yeah, but specifically, what about it upsets you so much? And then they're going to tell you all the really personal stuff. And they're immediately de-escalated, and now they're opening themselves up to you, and they're a little bit vulnerable, and they're willing to have a conversation, and you're offering to help if you're that HR person. And then you go in the other room and have the same conversation, and they say, you know, I had four job offers on my desk, and I picked this one because I thought this company had promise, and, you know, I brought in all the clients, and that matters to me. I go home, and I, you know, tell my spouse what a great job I'm doing or whatever, and if so-and-so gets the corner office instead of me, I'm going to lose face with my family. And, you know, all of these kinds of stuff, things come out. And so that's what we try to deal with conflict. So, you know, like you said, if you're in the middle of a situation and it seems scary and overwhelming and all of that, all you really need to do is ask people some really simple questions to sort of get underneath the conflict.
How important does personality play? Like, I'll give you an example. In recruiting, one that I noticed many years ago, there was this concept I was introduced to called emeralds, rubies, sapphires, and pearls, which is essentially just one form of personality profiling, much like DISC or color profiling or even some of the other Myers-Briggs type ones. But what I found years ago is, depending on the personality, say, for example, person A, who you mentioned, who says, gosh, you know, I'm the loyal person. I've been at the company 20 years. I'm always overlooked. That would be, in this language, what we would call pearl, somebody who kind of doesn't speak up for themselves as much. They tend to get passed up for promotions for that very reason, very kind of behind the scenes, and then can be sometimes passive in the way that they, passive aggressive in the way that they approach conflict, as opposed to somebody who is the second person who you mentioned, person B, who has a little bit more of an ego. I'm the best. I'm the top producer here, and I had four other offers. That's more what we would consider a ruby personality. And a ruby personality just wants to look important and be important. And so one of the things I found years ago is that how you approach these personalities is different based on conflict. Like, for example, somebody who is more of a passive person, a pearl personality, you would want to approach them in a very soft, empathetic way. And with the ruby personality, you almost have to do a takeaway and take it away from them, because the rubies in my career path, I've seen rubies ask for a corner office right off the bat when they walk in the door, even though it's like asking for green M&Ms in the, you know, in their
my
suite.
Writer says.
Exactly. So I'm just wondering, when you're going through this conflict analysis and asking these questions, does personality play at all into how you approach the conflict, or are these unequivocal tools that you can use irrespective of personality types?
So I would say, first of all, absolutely, the personality styles and the way you've described them fits in perfectly. The questions, I think, are sort of absolute tools because they're going to open the person up for them to show you their pearlness or their rubiness by the way they answer the questions. So once you start hearing their answers, then you've got to adapt what you're doing to the things they say. So the ruby person, I would say, oh my gosh, yeah, you really have built this company up. Now that you've shown me the numbers and the name off all the clients, holy cow, you don't need a corner office. You need something much bigger than that. Let's figure out how to get you that recognition, right? Because, you know, this is an office, and how often are you in the office anyway? It sounds like what we need to do is get you a nicer car, you know, or whatever. So listening to people, and there's a Japanese martial art called Aikido that's the art of letting somebody else have their way and helping them recognize, it's the idea of telling the ruby person, oh my gosh, you're so much bigger and more important than this silly little office, right? It's giving them over and above, which, like you said, is what the ruby person would probably need. And the pearls person, I would give anything to give the pearls person and an executive coach who could help them see the horizon and know that such and such vice president has announced that, you know, she's going to resign in 6 months, and then go to HR and say, I want to start to plant the seed for that corner office because it really matters to me. And how can we arrange to make that happen? And at the same time, keep everybody else happy and be more assertive and proactive, because the pearls people tend to be so detached from the power stuff that's going on that I find they're on the receiving end of the news after it's already been announced that, you know, Mr. Ruby is going to get that corner office.
And the pearls person,
and then they're backpedaling and trying to make up for lost time and already being the victim of the decision rather than an active participant in it from the outset.
Yeah, and it's funny because in my experience of studying these different types of personalities, I think the pearl, and I have some element to some extent, we all have those elements. The emeralds need facts to feel safe making a choice. The sapphires just want to have fun and figure out how can I just enjoy this as much as possible. But I think to some extent we all have that. And I think those people who might have larger amounts of pearl or blue or whatever you would want to call it, if you're doing DISC or one of those other ones, I think they have the hardest time with conflict because they're taught, for some reason, whether it's culturally or whether it's within their own family or just however it is, you know, the nature versus nurture, that it's inappropriate to ask for what they want. And so when they find themselves in an opportunity where they get to speak up, they see that as conflict and then shy away.
Exactly. So what you're saying is totally true, and I want to take it to the next level. I was doing some work with a leadership team at this very large architecture construction engineering consulting firm, and there were four guys in this case at the top of the company who were running the company, and they just could not get along well at all, and it was all, you know, power struggles and this and that. And they brought a consultant in who did the color thing. And so I walked in and they said, well, we're blues and those two guys, they're reds. And that's why we don't get along. And I said, so what did this consultant teach you about that? And they said, well, just that. And I said, gosh, you needed to have her back for day two. Because here's what I think is important about conflict. It's exactly understanding what you just described about those four core kinds of personality styles. And then understanding how you're different from other people. But then the next step is, how does a pearl talk to a ruby? How does a sapphire know that the emerald needs information? It's enough to know, well, you know, he's an emerald and I'm a sapphire. But then what do we do with that? How do I learn to speak in emeraldese to get my point across to that emerald so that they'll understand me the best? And frankly, that's one of the things that I do as a mediator is I translate. You know, I translate between the different Myers-Briggs types and you know, these, what's the name for it? Do you call it gems or stones or something?
Yeah, I think it's a stones personality or gems personality profiling. It was just something I came across years ago that resonated.
Yeah. So I think a good conflict resolver, your HR person or your, you know, your manager or your mediator, walks in and says, what she's saying is this, and here's why that's important to her. So now what do you want to say to her about that? Because it sounds like she needs to hear this from you. And we can help them either get them to say it the way that the other person can understand it better, or tell it to me and I translate and turn to the other person and say, what he's really saying is this. She goes, oh, I didn't hear that in that at all. And the two of us will laugh and go, we know, but it was in there. And so, you know, helping just to take some of the mystery out of it and help people hear what the other one's really after, then suddenly they're not banging the table and screaming out of frustration and insisting on a position, but they're saying, oh, all you really needed was to know that? Okay. Two executives I worked with, two senior vice presidents in a international, huge electronics company that everybody knows. One was director of import-export and the other of worldwide global distribution. And they had, their communication had broken down to where they weren't talking at each other at all. But when I got them in the room, and they used to be friends. I mean, they used to hang out together as buddies. And when I got them in the room together, the Japanese-American first generation says, he always sends me emails. He knows I'm insecure about my spelling and my grammar in English because I'm new to the language. And why doesn't he just pick up the phone and call me? And every time I call him, he lets it go to voicemail. He never picks up the phone. And the other guy says, managers don't sit at their desks all day. Managers go out and patrol the line and the troops, because he was third generation military. And he thought that's what managing well was. And the other guy thought, no, managing well is sitting at my command center with all my screens in front of me and managing my end of the business. And they kind of went, so you thought I was insulting you when I was doing this? And just breaking down again all the mystery, because I don't know which one of them was an emerald. And the military guy may very well have been a ruby himself. But I do know that they needed to understand that the intent that each of them was projecting onto the actions of the other was what was getting them in trouble. And once they understood the real intent or lack of intent in that action, then they kind of went, oh, because that really, you know, that's why I did this back to you, because, and so we can just de-escalate it and track it back. And then they're talking about how to fix the problem going forward. And those two guys ended up having lunch once a week every Monday as a new ritual to make sure they were meeting face-to-face and having the kind of discussions that they wanted to have.
Yeah, I think that's so important. To your point, I think a lot of conflict of any type, personally or professionally, can be resolved through looking at what's missing in the communication and how do you insert that in the communication, because that's where so much upset comes from. And in fact, even Dr. Paul White was on my show a couple months ago, and he wrote this great book called Appreciation at Work with Dr. Gary Chapman, and they found out in recent research that 87% of the reason that employees leave their jobs is lack of appreciation, and people just aren't being appreciated in a way that's understood, which leads to conflict and upset and high turnover.
Yeah, and you can't do it all with an Employee of the Month plaque. I mean, it really has to be how they're treated and how much appreciation is really shown to them. We take it for granted.
Exactly. And so tell me, one thing I do want to touch on, Lee J, is this idea of negotiating a salary, because it's obviously an employee market out there, which means that there are more jobs than there are employees to fill the jobs. And you do see, say, for example, kind of like the Ruby personalities, who are the more dynamic type A people, who are going out there and job hopping and getting $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $50,000 increases in salaries. But then you also have these people who don't want to leave their jobs, who want to get a higher salary without having to job hop. From a conflict standpoint, what's the best way to approach the possibility of negotiating a raise or promotion?
I always like the value-based, if that's available to you. I like being able to say, let's look at the numbers, and if it's any kind of a sales or marketing role or business development or anything in that genre, let's look at what I've helped to bring in to the company over this past year, and let's look at past years. I'm assuming in most industries, the economy is robust because there are so many jobs and not enough people to fill them. And so saying, you know, it looks like I brought in $10 million worth of business this year. Last year was only $7.5 million. So I've increased my contribution to the bottom line of the firm by a third, that feels to me like I should get a significant increase in my base or my bonus or something for this past year. And let's have that conversation and see if they're willing to engage in some back and forth around it. I think the other thing is if they come to you with the baseline and say, well, you know, it's been an average year, but not a great year, so we're going to offer you the same 3% as last year and the same as everybody else, then I think the question has to be, can we talk about the things that you feel that I did that contributed value this year, the things that you think I have to work on, and then goal set with what are the things you want to see me accomplish by next year, and can we agree that if I accomplish those things by next year, that we won't be having this 3% conversation next year? So some of it's thinking longer term, because I think people tend to negotiate their bonuses or their increases once a year and tend to think about it in one-year increments. And if you take like the Pearl, for example, who's going to be loyal to that company and wants to stay there, they can negotiate over a longer arc, because the real question is, what are they going to be making in 5 years, not just this next year? And so if the goal is to be, you know, at 30% more, 40% more in 5 years, can you agree to cooperate in this first year for more significant measurements and increases in benchmarks for years 2, 3, and 4 to help make up for it? If you're just always saying, I'll take one for the team this year, and you know, I understand that's all that you can offer, and I want to be a team player, if you do that every year, you build a pattern so that when they're sitting in that little quiet room with the door closed before they call you in to tell you what you're going to get, they know you won't put up much of a fuss, and they purposely don't pay you as much, because they know that the Ruby is going to come in banging their chest and screaming and yelling, and of the budget they have for increases, they're going to set it aside for the Ruby, unless you take some other tact. And clearly, you know, banging the table and screaming and yelling is not going to work for a Pearl. So it's got to be something more strategic and with a longer-term vision, and that emphasizes loyalty and performance and the things that the company needs to be paying attention to, not just the squeakiest wheel.
Yeah, and I think a fun exercise, I was just writing an article for an organization recently about the most valuable thing that you can do in your career. And for me, that's understanding what makes you valuable in the market, because whether you want to make $100,000, have a VP title, or whether you just want to be a contributing team member, you're not going to get the things you want if you don't first think that you're worth it. And so one of the exercises I suggested is to make a list of the top 10 reasons that you're valuable. And maybe for those people out there listening who think, gosh, Jen or Lee J, that sounds insurmountable, what I would suggest is once a month, just make a little note. It could be on your smartphone, it could be on your computer, or on a little piece of paper somewhere, and just make a note of one way that you added value. And it could be tangible, or it could be something that's less tangible, and just make a note so that by the time you get to the end of this year or next year, you have 12 items that you've added value, and that way you start to embody that. And when you do go to ask for that raise, no matter what personality type you are, you're able to take ownership and be accountable for those ways that you were successful.
Absolutely right. Because companies don't always have the ability to give raises, but in most years, some people are getting them and some aren't. And so your job, I think, is to track, as you've suggested, the things that you contribute, the things that you do that add value, and make the case for that. You have to be your own advocate, and you have to be one of the negotiation seminars that's the one in the airplane magazines and stuff says, you don't get what you deserve, you get what you negotiate for. And that's a scary proposition, but I think it's important, for example, for Pearls to know they don't have to walk in and try to be Rubies in order to negotiate. There are other ways to do it. In fact, I have a friend here in Los Angeles who has a company that helps women specifically negotiate their raises. They will negotiate the best deal they can, and then she'll step in and take it from there and take a percentage of what she's able to get them as an increase because she negotiates on their behalf better than they typically do on their own.
Wow, that's amazing. And I think, you know, it's something that you need, because not all of us are taught. It depends on, you know, socioeconomic status, culturally, race, so many factors come into play in whether or not it's acceptable for you to speak your mind and ask for what you want, right. whether you're a woman, a man, you know, whatever your background might be, all these things kind of play into how well or poorly we all negotiate. So I think it's about just taking ownership and yeah. not being afraid. So.
And I think it's how well you do it and how well you recognize your audience, who you're saying it to. You know, if you're talking to a Ruby, you have more room to be a little bit stronger and more confident, and they'll actually respect that in you as a trait. But if you're talking to somebody who's a Pearl and asking for that increase, you've got to do it in a way that's sensible, logical, and that shows a history of good things, as opposed to, like you said, the Emeralds, they need information, so you got to go to them with a bullet list, I assume.
And yeah, so exactly. Facts. And you can't push yeah. them. Each one you have to decide, because if you tell an Emerald right then and there, you need to give me a decision right now about this, the Emerald will turn you down on principle because they weren't given enough time space, right. you know, versus a Ruby is going to be much quicker in how he or she approaches things. And again, it's not good or bad. It's just things to observe in ourselves and others and to have compassion. Like you said, it's not about the blue versus the red people, whether we're talking the hockey teams or the disc profiling or whatever it might be. Yes. It's about understanding, oh, I have a little blue in me. I have a little red. Let me have compassion for this person and just understand they're designed differently than me. Doesn't make them better or worse. It just means I have an opportunity to empathize and see their perspective.
Exactly. Exactly. I love the way you look at this. And I don't hear anything in your voice that tells me that you're afraid of conflict or that you put your head in the sand, because the way you talk about it is so logical and you understand people so well. I'm surprised that you would see yourself as struggling with this.
I think it's just in certain circumstances. It's not in all. And it depends on who I'm interacting with. I think in certain circumstances, Lijie, I really appreciate that, by the way. You know, I can be very, very confident, but that's a whole other show that we could do about different stances. You know, most of us, when we get upset, it's because we're in father-child or mother-child. Mm-hmm. And if we're interacting with somebody who we see as a parental figure and we have some sort of history, we might shut down in that situation versus somebody we might have a more amicable relationship with. We're just going to let it flow. So I understand it all logically and I can apply it most of the time, mm-hmm. but I'm still a human being. And I would be lying if I said to you and to our listeners that, you know, I had it all figured out. This is why I wanted to have you on the show, is as much for our listeners as for my own learning and ability to grow as a human being.
I love it. Well, I'm just thrilled that you thought that the topic was interesting and that you invited me on. And I love talking with you because you're a great example of somebody who understands all of this and still admits to struggling with it here and there under certain circumstances. And I think that in itself is important for the listeners to hear.
Yeah, it's not about being perfect. It's about, for me, what I've noticed, Lijie, is that it's the time frame that we're able to adjust our behavior. So if years ago, maybe I would stick my head in the sand for days, weeks, hours, minutes, whatever it is, I'm now able to transition and go, okay, seconds, you know, how long is my head going to be in the sand and how long do I let it impact me before you pivot and choose something different?
Good for you. And I think that's it. It's breaking old habits. It's replacing them with new ones, like the ones that we're talking about. And I think a general guideline I would give everybody when it comes to conflict is make fewer statements, ask more questions.
I like that. I may meme you on that. Make fewer statements.
Ask more questions.
I love that. Well, tell our listeners, Lijie, I mean, you've given me so much information and so much for our listeners to take away from today's show already, but if people do want to connect with you or they do want to be able to find out about your services, executive coaching, mediation, otherwise, where would they find information about you?
The easiest thing, really, I mean, with a name like Lijie, it's L-E-E-J-A-Y, two separate words, you can Google me and find everything, but I would suggest the easiest is probably social media. So find me on LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter and places like that, and we can connect there. We can interact and chat there. We can, I can plug them into the kinds of products or services that they're interested in, or just answer simple questions. And then hopefully, you know, just like you do with your social media, hopefully the posts are a continuing reminder of some of these things so that we stay in top of mind about it and we don't crawl back into being afraid of it again, because we're seeing it constantly and it's reminding us that we can do this.
I love that, Lijie. Well, it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show today. I know I gleaned a lot of interesting wisdom from you and takeaways on how to approach conflict in my life, and I'm intending that our listeners did as well. So thank you for all of your great insights.
Thank you very much. It's been a great conversation. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. So for those of you who might have missed any portion of today's show, or if you just really liked the show and want to listen to it again, the show will be available on latalkradio.com. If you go to Channel 1, Get Yourself the Job, at the bottom of that page, you'll find an archive, which will include today's show and all the prior shows over the last 3 years. And later in the week, you'll also be able to find the show on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. We also invite you, please do leave us any feedback, comments, rate us. That's the only way that we can get better and find, you know, appropriate information to share with our listeners is any feedback that you give us. So we welcome that on iTunes or on our Get Yourself the Job page on Facebook as well is a great place to find us. We also share a lot of content on that page. And thank you again to everybody who tuned in today. And thanks again for Lijie for joining us today.
My pleasure, Jennifer. You're the best. Thank you.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.